Okay, so we're continuing our study of Sefer Shoftim, and we're in the middle of Perek Daled, chapter 4, and we'll be continuing with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Just to remind ourselves, what the first few Pesukim in Perek Daled had done is it thrust us into another negative time period in the Shoftim, in Shoftim history, in Klal Yisrael's history. We had a successful shofet whose name was Ehud. And then there's this period of time that we hear of 20 years long that the Jews, the Bnei Yisrael, are under the control of a king named Yavin, who's a Melech Knan, and his general, the name is a little more famous to us, his general is Sisera, and things are really bad, there's a lot of pressure. And then comes Devorah, the famous shofetess, the famous judge, shofet. Devorah is on the scene together with her selected general, Barak ben Avinoam, and it looks like things are going to be heading in a good direction. I don't remember if we noted it last time, but it's sometimes on the side of your Tanakh, depending on the edition. It tells us where Pesukim are located in terms of them being a Haftorah. So the Haftorah for Parshas Bishalach, which is famously known for the Az Yashir and the Shira, the song. So Svardim makes a little bit more sense that Svardim, perhaps, that Svardim begin the Haftorah from chapter 5, which is Shiras Devorah, which will begin, God willing, today. Shiras Devorah, the song of Devorah, because again, the Haftorah was always a concept of this time period in Jewish history when the powers that be did not allow the Jews to read from their Torah, the Torah scroll, something about, they knew the difference between Torah and Nevi'im. Right, we'd normally think if you're not allowed to have religious readings in public, so you just can't have anything. But they felt there was something specific about the five books of the Torah that was outlawed, but you were allowed to read Navi in public, and so the Chachamim at that time decided to make selections of the Navi, have the selection match the theme of the Parsha somewhat. So Shiras Devorah, which is going to be in Perek Hey, that was selected as part of the Haftorah, which for the Sfaradim, they have 31 Psukim to be part of the Haftorah. Ashkenazim, for a reason that I guess it makes sense thematically in the sense that why would you sing a song of praise if you don't know what you're singing about? And the only real way to know what you're singing about was to read the story of how it was bad and how the Jews were saved and then they're victorious. So then you could appreciate. So the Ashkenazim pull it back another 20-some-odd psukim, which ends up with a Haftorah of 51, which in reality is the longest Haftorah of the year, I guess besides, I don't know, Psukim-wise, but maybe even Psukim-wise. Yonah, we read a whole Sefer by Yom Kippur. But definitely the normal cycle of Haftorahs, this is the longest, and one of the few that come from Sefer Shoftim. So just to keep it in mind, I don't remember if we mentioned it. So we're picking up the story after they had already selected 10,000 soldiers from both the tribes of Zvulun and Naphtali. Seems to be some type of selected force that Barak is going to have. And you know why particularly these two tribes, I did not see an explanation for. We know that all, at least the way the Pesukim are describing to us, all 12 tribes seem to be affected by whenever there's a foreign power ruling over for, we had 8 years, 18 years, now 20 years. We don't select, we don't say, oh, it only affected certain of the Shvatim, but other ones were fine. We seem to group everything together and use the word Yisrael like it's the whole nation. Why Zvulun and Naphtali is kind of, you know, selected to be the messengers to bring the Yeshua, the salvation, it's not so clear. Outside of Sefer Shoftim, we usually hear of, right, Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert, he selects Elif Lamata, he selects 1,000 from each tribe when it comes to one of the wars at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. We have this notion in Sefer Shmuel that when they're drafting for the army, they draft from everyone and all 12 tribes. So here we have this force and they're able to get 10,000 soldiers. Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is the Pasuk that we're up to, seems to be a side note, almost being offered to us by the narrator. The art scroll does a service in that it gives the translation in parentheses, which obviously it doesn't mean that the pasuk doesn't, we don't read it. There's no such thing. But it's not within the flow of the story. Because we hear in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the Chever HaKeni Nifrad Mikayin Mibnei Chovav Chosein Moshe. There was an individual named Chever, and he was a Canaanite. We've heard of the Canaan before. The Canaan were the descendants of Yisro. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, as we hear he's called Chovav. So Yisro, that we know from Parshas Yisro. Yisro had, if I'm not mistaken, Chazal understand that he had seven names. Chovav is one of his names. The word Chovav is a language of Chiba. Chiba is an endearment because he became close to the Jewish people. He became close to Hashem. Yisro, according to the Medrash, Yisro was one of Paro's advisors. Paro had three advisors. One of them was Bilam, one of them was Eov, and one of them was Yisro. And Yisro was the one who was so aghast at what Paro was doing that he ran away. And Yisro, one of his other's names, if I might not be getting it exact, is something like Pitaim, that he was. Which means to fatten the cows of Avodah Zarah. He tried all faiths. Yisro was a man searching for truth. He eventually finds it in Judaism, Vayishma Yisro. He hears what happened and he joins the Jewish people. But we know that he doesn't remain. He eventually leaves the Jewish people. He goes back to his own lands. And his descendants, they play a little bit of an interesting role in Jewish history, in that they seem to be separate from the Jewish people, but they have some type of relationship, some type of affinity towards the Jewish people. Here we're hearing about a man from that larger family named Chever. He was Nifrad Mikayin. He himself had separated from the Canaanites, Mibnei Chovav, from the children of Chovav, Chosein Moshe, Chovav, which is Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe. Vayet Ahalo Ad Elon B'Tzananayim. And he set up his tent, he pitched his tent as far as the plains of a place called Tzananayim, Asher Es Kedesh, which is near Kedesh. And the Mefarshim understand that the goal here is to tell us that he, together with his wife, who we're going to be introduced to in the story, they were nearby. And so parenthetically, it's almost like the narrator of Tanakh is telling us, by the way, there is a man named Chever HaKeni. He is near this battle scene, and so when, you know, enter stage right, when his wife comes on the scene, his wife Yael comes on the scene, we'll know where she came from, we'll know that she's living nearby. We had read a pasuk previously that said some of the descendants of Yisro were living near, not the city of Yericho, but that Ir Tamarim, the city of date palms that had been built nearby the city of Yericho. And this individual, Chever HaKeni, he had separated himself from there. And the Mefarshim seemed to understand that he had ingratiated himself with this foreign king, Yavin, which is an important detail in the story, because Chever HaKeni and his household is going to be seen as a safe place for anyone who's on the side of Yavin, this king of Canaan, who's currently ruling over the Jews. So we're told that, again, seems to be parenthetically. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayagidu leSisra ki ala Barak ben Avinoam har Tavor. It was told to Sisra that Barak ben Avinoam had gone up to Har Tavor, and Barak ben Avinoam, who's the Jewish general, right, who was appointed by Devorah, the Shofet, the Shofetess. So we know that he has got this force of 10,000 soldiers. So when Sisra is told that Barak has gone up the mountain, it doesn't mean that he went up alone. It means he's gone up with a force of 10,000 and that there's a military gathering. For all we know, this is very likely the first time that there's been any military threat during this 20-year period of time. And if you're the general and you hear about the potential of a military threat, so your only natural course of action is to respond. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayazek Sisra es kol rechbo. Vayazek, a language that we had in Pasuk Yud, the same way it was used to gather the troops, that Barak gathered the troops through a zaka, through like a scream. So Sisra also gathers the troops in that type of dramatic fashion, as Kol Ruchvo, all of his chariots, which we had heard about before, Tisha Meos Rechav Barzel, 900 iron chariots, which it sounds imposing. It's also that we never mention the amount of chariots that are on the Jewish side, which maybe means that they had none. If it was something of a similar size battle, you would make mention. Oh, they had 900 tanks. They had 700 tanks, and it's a war of numbers. We don't hear about the weaponry really that is with the Israelite army. But Sisera has his 900 iron chariots. The Askol Hashem, Askol Ha'am Asher Ito, all of the people who were with him. Mecharoshes Hagoyim ad Nachal Kishon, from the region of Charoshes Goyim until Nachal Kishon, a large group of soldiers that were not told the number of, meaning the 900 iron chariots, that we get the quantity, but then we just hear that there's a Kol Ha'am. There is so many people who are with him. What the numbers are, we're not sure. So you have the two forces are coming towards, well, not necessarily coming towards each other, because the Israelite army is in a location, is in Har Tavor, which some of the Mefarshim point out. At that moment in time, that's a military advantage. To have the high ground is a military advantage, which you would make the rational argument that the Israelite army needed every military advantage possible. They're going up against this behemoth. They're going up against the aggressor for the last 20 years. This is the underdog story of would be the Israelite army. So they're kind of perched in the high ground. The enemy is very confident. So the enemy doesn't care where they are, and the enemy is coming at them. So that's the moment that seems to be building. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vatomer Devora El Barak. So Devorah now says to Barak, "Kum, arise, ki zeh hayom hasher nasan Hashem es Sisera b'yadecha. You should arise, ki zeh hayom. This is the day asher nasan Hashem es Sisera b'yadecha, that Hashem is going to give over Sisera into your hands." Meaning, we had already previously, earlier in the perek, we had had words of Nevuah telling Devorah, speaking the word of Hashem to Barak, telling him that you would be successful. He had said he didn't want to go alone. She came along with, which is why she's present. She's on Har Tavor with the force. And she says to Barak, today's day, Ki zeh yom asher nasan Hashem es Sisera b'yadecha. This is the day that Hashem is going to give Sisera over into your hands. Halo Hashem yatsa lefanecha. Is it not that Hashem is going to go out before you? That Hashem is going, and that was always the recipe in all of Sefer Yehoshua in terms of the success that they were going to have in battle. Both the success that was prophesied at the end of Sefer Devarim, countless times, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Yehoshua, Hashem's going to be with you, Hashem will go out to battle, Hashem's going to drive the nations out. Hashem is almost like the tank, capital T, that pushes forward in the battle first, and then the Israelite army is able to walk through and lead themselves to victory because Hashem is in front of them. So the same recipe is here. Halo Hashem yatzal afanecha. Behold, Hashem is going out. And here's the interesting point. By Yered Barak mehar Tavor. Barak comes down from Har Tavor. The Va'aseres alafimish acharav, and the 10,000 men come after him. That there's a level of emuna, there's a level of faith and bitachon and trust, because you're giving up your military advantage. You only need a military advantage when you're fighting a battle that goes according to the rules and regulations of warfare. When it's, as the pasuk is describing beforehand, when it's Hashem yatzal lefanecha, so you don't need to have the high ground, you don't need to have the military advantage, and the demonstration of the faith is Barak leaving Har Tavor. And once he is willing to leave, once he is willing to show that he has trust that this is going to go in his favor, Aseres Alafim Ish Acharav, so then it's only natural that the 10,000 men who are with him, they go with. What do they know How much do they know about the fact that this is a nevuah that was told by Devorah to Barak? So that's not necessarily clear. What they can see is they can see the faith and trust that Barak has in Hashem, and they can tap into that. They follow him. That's a true, definitely, you would say, any military leader, but definitely a Jewish military leader, is that the soldiers follow. And that's what happens. Pasuk Tesvav, Vayaham Hashem es Sisra, V'yaskol harekav, V'yaskol hamachane lefi cherev, lefne barak. Vayaham, so the translation that Art School gives for Yaham is to confound. We don't usually use that English word so often. What do we have in other translations?
Discomfited.
Discomfited. And the other translation, what do you have for the very beginning of Pasuk 15? Verse 15. What do you get?
Confused.
So I think confused is maybe the best translation. To confused is it's some type of, and this is used multiple times in Tanakh. One of the ways that Hashem provides a victory is to cause some level of confusion among the enemy camp. Whether that means that they hear noises, whether it means that there's a breakdown in their communication, but it means that whatever mental advantage that the other side had, all their military successes, all their experience, there's a sense of confusion, and it's in that moment of confusion, or those many moments of combined confusion, where there's the opportunity for the underdog Israelite army to go ahead and be victorious. And it's our tradition, meaning the Mesorah of Tanakh, is that this is coming from Hashem. Vayaham Hashem, Hashem causes this confusion among the ranks. As Sisera, number one, Sisera, who's the general. So once you have the captain of the ship not being able to navigate properly, once you have the general not being able to, V'yaskol ha-rechev, then we move on to those rechev. The rechev were the chariots. The gravitas of the Sisera, of the army of Sisera, was those chariots. We've heard multiple times about them. So the rechev, all those who drive the chariots, who are on the chariots, they're confused. V'yaskol ha-machane, the entire camp, as we made reference to some large number of soldiers who, right, we don't have the number, they got confused, lefi cherev, according to the mouth of the sword, lefnei barak, before barak. This is a tremendous, it means tremendous military victory. The next few psukim will spell it out. But it goes, once there's this opportunity, so then the sword, lefnei barak, before barak, can be successful. And you almost follow the, right? What the pasuk previously, in terms of the setup, was Hashem will, right? Hashem will go out before you, and then you'll have the military success. So that's what happens. Vayaham Hashem. Hashem causes them to be confused, and now there's the military success. Vayered Sisera me'al ha-merkava. Sisera got off of his chariot. Vayonas beraglav, and he ran on foot. He ran on foot. That's already a sign of, you know, the battle. It's not 100% lost yet, but you're losing. You're losing when your general has to jump off of his chariot and run on foot. You're going to be at a huge disadvantage. He's no longer going to be directing the battlefront. Sounds like Vayonas Baragla. Vayonas a lot of times is a language of running to try to escape. He's trying to escape. He's trying to run. And there is as long as Sisera is alive, and this we'll kind of see within these next few psukim, as long as Sisera is alive, there's a potential threat. Because while they're able to, as we'll see in the next pasuk, they're going to be able to win this battle, that's going to be able to be done. But a general like Sisera, if he's able to survive, if he's able to escape, there's no telling a force that he could build up again. And so while you may win the battle, by having Sisera alive, the feeling is that you could still lose the war. You could still lose the long term. And again, what they're trying to accomplish is right now they're under the control of this Canaanite king Yavin, and they would like to regain independent control. So is it enough to knock out the force of soldiers without Sisera? It seems not. Pasuk Tezayin, Ubarak radaf achare harechev v'achare hamachne ad charosh hasagoyim. So Barak, together with his force of 10,000, is chasing after the chariots and the camp, meaning all soldiers are being chased after ad charosh hasagoyim until they reach the place of charosh hasagoyim. Vayipol kol machane Sisera l'ficherev. And all of the camp of Sisera, all of the foreign soldiers, all of the enemy soldiers of Sisera fall, l'ficher, they fall according to the edge of the sword. Lo nishar ad echad. No one's left. So, you know, most likely we should understand the pasuk as being literal, that whatever number of soldiers there were, miracle, all soldiers are wiped out. Is it possible that it's a little bit of an exaggeration in the sense that the same way sometimes we hear about very, very large numbers, and when we hear those numbers, it doesn't always mean there was an exact number. It means it's a lot. So lo nishar ad achad, maybe it was as if there's nothing, that no one was left. Except for Sisera. So that's why if you look at the text, it sounds like Barak Radaf Achare Harechev, he's running after the chariot drivers and the chariots. Va'achare Hamachna. And he's also running after the camp. Those are the foot soldiers, those are the regular soldiers. And they're successful in Lo Nishar Arachad, all of them are left. He has not been able to run after Sisera, and he doesn't know where Sisera is. So Sisera is the only one who's left. And if in a different context or in a different story, maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal that Sisera is left alive. I would have to imagine, because the Navi spends so much time, as we're about to see, and goes into such great detail in terms of bringing down Sisera and the miracles involved in it, and then we'll see, right, we get two real windows into this war. We get window number one, which is happening right here, meaning the actual war. But we're going to have an equally interesting view of the battle and view of the war in terms of Shiras Devorah, in terms of how the song of Devorah, which is in big picture meant to praise Hashem and thank Hashem for that victory, what do you highlight? What aspects of the story? And when we'll see how much, you know, Tanakh real estate is devoted to Sisera, and even in rabbinic literature, you ask the average Ben Torah, I think, or Bat Torah, has probably heard of Sisera and has no idea who Yavin Melech Canaan is. Meaning that when you walk away from this story, Sisera is in your mind, and so we'll see how much time is devoted not only to bringing his downfall, but then praising that his downfall came about. So by using those psukim, we see how important Sisera was, and the Mefarshim kind of worked backwards, that keeping Sisera alive would have been too much of a threat in the future. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Right, we had mentioned that Sisera's on the run by feet, so we continue that part of the story. The Sisera nas beraglav. Sisera was running by foot, and he ran nas beraglav el ohel Yael Eshes Chever Hakeni. Oh, from Pasuk Yud Aleph. He runs to the tent of Yael, the wife of Chever Hakeni. Why? Ki shalom bein Yavin melech Hatzor uvein beis Chever Hakeni. We had alluded to it before, but here we see it black on white. Ki shalom, there was peace between Yavin melech Hatzor, Yavin the king of Hatzor, who is in control of Eretz Yisrael at this time, uvein beis Chever Hakeni, and between the household of Chever Hakeni. that Hever HaKeni had aligned himself more with the ruling party of Eretz Canaan than with his, you know, long-lost, distant kind of cousins, the Jews, meaning he comes from Yisro. Instead of feeling the plight, or instead of being part of Am Yisrael, he's actually more in line with the king of Chatzor, with this Yavin. Now, when we see, and already a lot of us know the basics of the story, it would appear that Hever HaKeni's breaking away from his family and setting up shop here, that was quite fortuitous. That was how Moshe Hashem provided, right? We talk about the in rabbinic literature, there's this language of the refuah before the makkah, that the healing is there before the wound, right? Esther is in office in Persia before Haman rises to power. So then the Yeshua, the refuah, is there before the makkah. And that's something that Hashem can orchestrate. And so having, we're going to see the role that Yael, Eishes Chever HaKeni, plays. So we needed to be told why she's living kind of on the side. And now we understand why Sisera runs there. Because Chever HaKeni, his compound, right, is a safe place. It's a safe place. El Ohel Ya'el, she has a tent. So we already know from Tanakh that it's common that to have multiple tents. There was the tent of Avram, there was the tent of Sarah. They had separate tents. How exactly that worked? Obviously, they were husband and wife. There is an aspect of whether it's always, whether it's certain time, that the men had a tent, the women had a tent. And Sisera selects to go into Yaal's tent, which the Mefarshim understand is more of a cover. That'll be less likely for the Jewish army that's running after him, running after everyone, to look for him in the tent of a woman than in the tent of her husband, Chever HaKeni. Who exactly Yaal was is up for interpretation. Whether she was even Jewish or not is up for interpretation, because not every member of Yisro's family converted. The tradition is that Yisro was a ger tzedek, converted, and that one of the reasons why he left Moshe Rabbeinu and left Klal Yisrael in the desert was to like go home and convince his relatives to also join Am Yisrael, to also convert, to come tachas Hashrina. But through the generations, who was and who was not a ger is not always so clear. We're going to see a pasuk in the Shira of Devorah, which puts Yaal, mentions Yaal in the same phrase as an individual who we read about last week very quickly, Shamgar, who we didn't know if we should count him as a shofate because he was only on the scene for was only one pasuk that's devoted. And so there's one of the pesukim in Shiras Devar, which we'll soon see, mentions Shamgar and Yaal in the same breath, in the same phrase. If she was so different, right, if she wasn't even a Gioris, if she wasn't even some type of convert, she wasn't Jewish, would you mention her in the same phrase as Shamgar? You know, maybe not. Which I saw the language of the Mitzvah Daven, and I'll point it out to you when we see it. He refers to her as some type of shofet, as some type of, that she was in some type of leadership position before she does the thing that makes her famous. So it's definitely, there's some mystery around Yaal Eishes Chever HaKeni. But Sisera thinks that he could have safe passage in her tent. Now, I use the word safe passage. It's not clear if he has an end game to his plan. I mean, he can't stay there forever. Maybe perhaps you would say he stays there for, you know, till things calm down, in Tanakh there are many times that there's a search party is sent out, and when the search party comes up empty, eventually the people give up. Right in the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, when the two spies come into Yericho, so the king of Yericho is all nervous and all looking, he sends out these search parties, but eventually they give up. And when they give up, that's when the two spies actually go back. So maybe that's his plan. It could also be that he has no plan. that he's on the run, and that he found the first place, or he found a place that seems to be a safe space, and he goes there. Pasuk Yud Zayin, or Yud Ches. Vateitze Ya'el Likras Sisra. So Ya'el went out towards Sisra. Vatomer Elav, and she says to him, Sura Adoni, Sura Elai Altira. Sur is a language of to turn. Right? So in Tehillim we say the pasuk Sur Meira the Ase Tov. Turn from doing bad, Ba'ase Tov, and do good. We say it in the Shabbos Psukah de Zimra. So Sura Adoni, turn my master, Sura Elai, turn towards me, Al Tira, do not be afraid. Which definitely makes it sound a little bit like the psukim kind of have to be read together, in the sense that obviously they're next door to each other. But when we read Pasuk Yud Zayin, so it sounds like he ran to her tent and went directly in. Pasuk Yud Ches makes it, or I'm a little bit off of my numbers, but I think it's Pasuk Yud Ches, that it makes it sound like he ran towards the property of this Chever HaKeni, and she got wind of that. So she goes, right, Vateitze Ya'el Likras Sisra. So she must have gotten wind of that because now she goes towards him. She has no idea that he's running towards her property. But once she's aware of it, she runs towards him. And apparently she already has a plan. She must have a plan in her mind that she could help the situation. Because Vatomer Elav, Sura Adoni, Sura Elai Altira, don't be afraid. Now, if you don't know what's going to happen, right? Most of us know what's going to happen. If you don't know what's going to happen, so you would have made the argument, no! Meaning, at this point, you would say, we've been told by the Tanakh that her husband is in line with the king. So it makes sense that she's saying, Al Tira, don't be afraid. But we'll see, we see very quickly that she had another plan in mind. Vayasar Eleha Es Ha'ola. So he does. He turns towards her, ha'ala, to her tent. Vatachaseu basmicha. She covers him with a smicha. The Metsudos Tzion defines it as some type of thick blanket. A thick blanket. A thick blanket to warm him, to comfort him, as we'll see, it's the first step. She's trying to get him to fall asleep. And in this moment of coming from this time of turmoil, he needs to calm down. If she wants him to fall asleep, he's going to have to calm down. She covers him with a blanket. Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayomer Eilah, he says to her, Hashkini na matmayim ki tzamesi. Hashkini na matmayim, give me now a bit of water, ma'at ma'im, a little bit of water, ki tzamesi, for I am thirsty, right? Sima'on, to be thirsty. Which makes sense, he just came from battle, he's on the run. Vatiftach es na'od ha'chalav, vatashkehu, vatichasehu. Instead, she chooses to open a na'od. A na'od is a common word in Tanakh for some type of skin container, right? We take for granted that containers are made out of glass and plastic. And then you know, at least 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you show up in Israel and they put the milks in a bag, right? They have different cultures, have different ways of... So animal skin was used to make even... You have to sew it really tight, but you can use animal skin to make even containers for liquid. Vatiftachas na'ora chalav, she opens up the chalav, she opens up the milk. Vatashkehu, she gives him milk, right? I don't know if this is where it came from. Can't fall asleep. You know, some warm milk. Does it work? I don't even know. But milk can make you sleepy. That's the approach that all the Mefarshim have. Rashi, the Radak, everyone seems to say that she wanted to make... right, Rashi's language is shahachalav machbir et haguf. It kind of it's heavy, And liyos nirdam, it can elicit a person to fall asleep. Vatechasei, again we hear that she covers him. She covers him again. You're warm, you're comfortable. I mean, I have this, obviously not trying to compare anything to Sisera, but I have this, you know, sometimes I notice in high school that when a boy is too, like, bundled in his coat, he's much more likely to fall asleep during shir. But if so sometimes I'll say, it might be a good idea to, like, just, like, you know, be a little bit cold. And I actually, there have been, I forgot which principal it was, but a principal kind of noticed that I think during COVID, that when they were doing things outdoors and were doing things with much more airflow and it was a little chillier, that there was the kids, they were more awake. And they're trying to adopt that notion, not to freeze the children, God forbid, but that being a little bit colder keeps you, you're a little bit more, it's not as calm. And so Yael here, she wants the calm. So she's giving him milk. Batashkeyu, she gave him the drink, and it seems that he took it, even though he asked for water. But presumably in that moment, you know, when you're really thirsty and you ask for a drink, if they don't give you exactly what you want, you're going to take it because that was given. He says to her, I want you to stand by the entrance of the tent. And if a man shall come and ask you, va'amar, and say, hayesh po ish, is there anyone here? Va'amart ayin, you should answer no. So it seems that Sisera wants a rest. He just wants to rest. And so he wants to stay in the tent. He's asking her to stay outside the tent. And that if they come looking, what's interesting is that he doesn't make it about him. He doesn't say if they ask if I'm here. He says if they say hayesh po ish, if there's anyone here. Because at this point, what we know is that everyone was on the run. He is not aware of the fact that his own force has been wiped out. And so he's going to understand that the same way he, in his last few moments probably, before he runs to this property, he notices that soldiers are running in every direction. Israelite forces are running after them. And so it's likely that any motel on the side of the road or any neighboring property is going to have some type of an inspection. And he wants to rest. So he asks her to stand outside. And this way, if anyone asks, she can say no. And he is totally believes that she's on his side at this point, that she would lie for him. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vatikach Yael Eshes Chever es Yisad HaOhel. She takes the tent peg that's normally used to tie down the rope on the, right? You could actually go outside right now, those who are here. We actually have similar things because we have a tent right outside the shul and there are these ropes keeping it down and then there are things into the ground. I didn't do this on purpose. Vatasem es HaMakeves Biada. She takes a makeves, the hammer. The Mitzvah Sion defines it as the kli that's used to normally take the tent peg and knock it into the ground. She takes it into her hands. Vatavo elav balat. She comes upon him balat quietly, secretly. She doesn't, as we're going to see, he was sleeping, and so she doesn't want to wake him up. Vatiskas hayased berakaso. She drove the peg into his rekes, which the Mesudas Sion said defines as like the temple area of the head. Vatitznach ba'aretz, and she was so successful that it went through into the ground. V'hu nirdam v'ya'af, v'hu nirdam. He was in a deep sleep, right? A nirdam is a deep sleep. V'ya'af, he had been exhausted. It's a little bit of a strange language to tell us that he was in a deep sleep and he was exhausted. I mean, he was exhausted. That's why he went into a deep sleep. Vayamos, and he died. It ended up being the deepest sleep. and that she executed, she killed Sisera. So the thing that for whatever reason no one else was able to do, she was given the opportunity to kill him, and she took advantage of it. And when we go back, just from you just glance over the psukim again, it appears that this was somewhat of her intention the entire time. Not that she's going to get him to fall asleep and she's going to find someone else to deal with it, but that she felt that she had the power to deal with the situation, and she does it. She does it. Pasuk Chaf Beis. V'hine Barak rodefes Sisera. So now we hear about the fact that Barak had been running after Sisera, which makes sense. They were able to run after everyone else, and they were able to be successful. But what about Sisera? So Barak is running after Sisera. Vateitze Yael lekraso. Yael goes out towards Barak. Vatomer lo, and she says to Barak, Lich the areka. Come, and I will show you es ha'ish asher atam avakesh, the man that you're looking for, meaning Sisera. Vayavo elea, so Barak comes with her. V'hine Sisera nofel meis. Behold, Sisera is fallen and is not alive. Vayaseh berakaso, and the peg is in his temple. Barak gets to see how he was killed. And it's upon the recognition that Sisera has been killed, then we hear the closing psukim of the story, which definitely makes it sound like until Sisera was dealt with, the story can't end. There can't be this positive ending for the Jewish people. But once Sisera has been dealt with, and now Barak knows about that, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayachna Elokim Bayomahu. Hashem caused on that day a sense of hachna, a sense of subjugation, as Yavin Melech Canaan, Yavin the king of Canaan, Lifnei B'nei Yisrael, before the B'nei Yisrael, that he is subjugated. He's now has the he's now the underdog. He is now the one who's going to be, to a certain extent, subservient to B'nai Yisrael. It doesn't make mention of the exact details of the next part of the war. Pasuk Avdalet tells us, Vatelech Yad B'nai Yisrael Haloch V'kasha Al Yavin Melech Kanan. The hand of B'nai Yisrael went out. Vatelech, it went. Haloch V'kasha. It went out. Haloch v'kasha is the second language, right? It already said batelech. So haloch means to keep going. V'kasha means in intensity. It went and it was harsher. Harsh went became more harsh. Al Yavin Melech Canaan, against Yavin the king of Canaan. Ad asher hichrisu as Yavin Melech Canaan, until they destroyed Yavin the king of Canaan. Is that a reference to actually killing the king? Is it a reference to killing his army, to killing his people, to the extent that he's no longer in control? And so those 20 years of occupation of Yavin, the king of Canaan, the 20 years that he's occupying the land of Eretz Yisrael, has come to a close. Is there some element in Pasuk Avdalid that as the battle went forward, it was more than just the original 10,000 soldiers? It maybe sounds that way, because we were talking about a group of 10,000 soldiers that came from the tribe of Zvolun and the tribe of Naphtali. All of a sudden, it's Vatelech Yad B'nei Yisrael. It's talking about the hand of B'nei Yisrael, which and speaking about it in the context of what sounds like military, right? The military arm of the Jewish people, which is more than just, or presumably more than just, the two tribes of Zvolun and Naphtali. And again, it all came from Barak, it all came from Devorah, and we'll see specifically in the Shira that the role that Yael played is not looked lightly upon. The fact that they knocked out an entire force, and all Yael did was take out the general, it's considered to be extremely, extremely valuable, the act that she did, the courage that she had. to accomplish what she did.
Is that all that we know about Yael? Is just here, or she just appears?
Yeah.
This is,
yeah. I mean, now we'll learn. We learn a little bit more about her in how Devorah chooses to praise her. But this is her moment. And again, the background behind her is still unclear. That she may not have been Jewish. Which again, she played a role in helping Klal Yisrael. She's going to be praised. You maybe would make the argument that with the words that we'll see of Devorah, together with the interpretation of Chazal, you could make the argument just on the type of praise that she is given that she was a member, that she was either a Gioris herself, or she had come from them, and that she was a Jew, because just using the way that Tanakh usually praises an individual, she sounds to be more in line, as we'll see. So we have a few minutes left for today. So let's begin Parakeh. So Parakeh is going to be different than any other Parak that we're going to learn in Sefer Shoftim. And even not thinking about the rest of the Sefer, just thinking, right, looking in the direction of things that we know. So the first four chapters were all kind of introduction / narrative. And Parakeh, the entirety of Parakeh, is a song. It's a shira. It's, depending on your edition of the Tanakh, it may look a little bit different. It's written more in shira form. If you ever, right, sometimes when it comes to Az Yashir in Parshas B'Shalach, and then Shiras Hazinu in the end of Sefer Devarim. So if you see in the Torah scroll, there's a certain way to write Shira. It's extremely, I think it's extremely challenging to be the reader, to read that, because there are all these breaks in the line. If you don't have the yad, if you don't have the pointer, I don't know, it seems that it can get a little bit confusing, but it's, and why that's so, I actually don't know. I don't remember the reason. Anybody know the reason why Shira is written differently in the Torah? Okay, you have a homework assignment if you want it. Not graded. But this is a Shira, and it gets listed when you talk about Chazal has this this concept that there are going to be 10 official songs, that 9 of the songs have been sung, and 1 is the song that we'll sing in the time of Mashiach. Shiras Devorah is a famous shira. Pasuk Aleph, Vatashar Devorah Ubarak Ben Avinoam. Devorah sings a song, and Ubarak Ben Avinoam, and Barak, the son of Avinoam, which already we may be thinking is part of, right? She kind of warned him about this. She warned him that if she comes along in the battle, then she's going to get a lot of the credit. She's mentioned here first. Bayomahu, on that day, Lemor saying. There is an explanation that the word Lemor is used when you want someone else to say something. So Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, it's that Moshe was then charged with Daber al Bnei Yisrael, with taking whatever Hashem said and spreading that message further. And so Vatashar Devorah Barak Ben Avinoam Bayomahu Lemor is an aspect of Klal Yisrael was supposed to say the Shira as well, that the Jewish people were supposed to sing this praise. Bayomahu, it's on that day. So we have we're echoing the language that Devorah had said, right? Devorah, and we had kind of, this was towards the beginning of the psukim that we took a look at today. When we read Pasuk Yudalad, Vatomer Devorah El Barak Kum Ki Bayom. This is the day. It's now. And on that same day, Bayomahu, on that day, Lemor, the Shira came on that day. There is an aspect of praising Hashem that comes from a genuine sense of spontaneous reaction. That there's a certain level of praise that can come from feeling it in the moment, and there's almost a recognition that if you would let time pass, just naturally, even though it was a great event, but the natural human emotions wouldn't be the same. That had Klal Yisrael waited a week before singing Az Yashir, it wouldn't have been the same. And that there's this moment of, right, that's why it happens to be in rabbinic literature, you could see this mentioned in the concept of Halal. We just finished 8 days of Halal for Hanukkah. So Halal, the rabbis noticed that there are actually two types of Halal. There's Halal of Zechira, of remembrance, and then there is a Halal, an experiential type of Halal. A Halal of remembrance, that's the type of Halal that we say on the holidays that we said on Hanukkah. It receives a bracha. It receives a bracha because it's a mitzvah, midrabanan, and so it has a bracha at the beginning, a bracha at the end. When you have an experiential type of halal, there's no bracha. Think about the halal that you say at the Seder. The halal that you say at the Seder, there is no beginning bracha. Because the concept of spontaneous almost flies in the face of a bracha. A bracha is, I know what's about to happen, so I pause and I reflect and I prepare by saying a bracha. But when Hashem does a great miracle for you, you can't start making a bracha. You just burst forth with your thanks. It just happens. It's spontaneous. So on Seder night, we're trying to tap into that type of emotion because we're supposed to feel like we left, and the Jews who left, they burst forth with an emotion. That's what happens here. It's by Yom Ahu Lemor. It's on that day. Devorah and Barak sing this Shira, praise of Hashem. And in one pasuk, they kind of almost encapsulate what had happened in pasuk Beis. And obviously, we're going to be taking a break from the classic translation of the psukim in the sense that this is it's poetry. It's a little bit more challenging, and it's definitely leaves a lot more room for proper interpretation. So pasuk Beis. Bifroa piraos biYisrael. So the translation in the art scroll is when vengeances are afflicted upon Israel. Bifroa piraos biYisrael. Bisnadev am. And then the people dedicate themselves. Baruch Hu Hashem, bless Hashem, which is very cryptic. So Rashi explains the concept of Befroa Peraos B'Yisrael, Kishabo Pirtzos Al Yisrael, Shepartzu Behem Oyveim Al Ozvam Es Hashem. When the enemies are able to be successful against Klal Yisrael, Al Ozvam Es Hashem, when they forsake Hashem. Meaning, the only way that the enemy is going to be successful against Klal Yisrael is if Klal Yisrael first went away from following the ways of Hashem. But then, v'hisnadev am, when the people, v'hisnadev, when they dedicate themselves, Rashi says, lashuv b'tshuva, when the people then go through tshuva, so at once, from that point and on, Baruch Hu Hashem. From that point and on, the blessing, Hashem is blessing, blesses Hashem. Hashem will bless them. That then the Yeshua will come. So in one pasuk, it's again in this poetic fashion, it really speaks of what happened. That the reason why, in this case, Yavin, the king of Canaan, is able to be successful, that's because Klal Yisrael left the way of Hashem. Bisnadevam, when they rededicated themselves to Hashem, through having Devorah as the Shofetes, Baruch Hashem, then Hashem comes in, Hashem provides a source of blessing.
So, this part of it is Devorah is the word of Hashem? Or is this written by her? Because of Benavua, we can assume it's
through him. So the question is, whose words are these? Are these Devorah and Barak's words, or are they divinely inspired? I'm not sure. I know that sounds like a something that we should know. And we're almost at the end, so maybe I'll try my hardest to know before next time. You would imagine that her sense of nevuah inspires this. The fact that she chooses words that are poetic, meaning she knew how to do that, but it doesn't appear that from the words of the psukim, it sounds like this is coming from her. It sounds like it's not necessarily divinely inspired, but maybe we'll pick up with that point, Bezu Shem, next time.